Before we get into the interview with Brett, I just want to say thank you so much to everyone that is supporting the show, be it through Patreon or through the PayPal link at theficcast.com. You can easily support the show through Patreon, even at just $1 per episode. That $4 per month really adds up. It's literally the price of a cup of coffee. But what you're saying is that you think that this show is worth supporting, the content is worth producing, and it's worth sharing with everyone out there. So please, I know I've been talking about it for a couple months now, but if you've been thinking about it, it really means a lot if we can get the audience to support the show at patreon.com/theficcast. Please, it takes 2 minutes to set up and it means a lot. It adds up. And thank you so much to everyone that is supporting the show through there. It's what's allowing me to make these new episodes every single week. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 348. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have someone on the show that I've known for a really long time, and you've probably heard him on other various podcasts. Now at Exos, formerly, I guess, Athlete's Performance, really now just Exos, but Brett Bartholomew, it's so awesome to have you on the show finally. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be able to connect with you and your listeners and get into some stuff here.
Well, one of the great things about, not to like really set the stage too much, but the audio stuff that you've done in the past, the presentations that you've done in the past, like I always go away just like wanting to go do something like right now. Like I get to like, I get to like open up a book, I get to go train, or I get to go do something. And you're very much like not a motivational speaker, but you're very motivating in the way that you speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Where does that come from? Have you kind of always been like that?
I think where it comes from, to answer it succinctly, is I almost lost my life when I was a teenager, and I think I had always been a motivated kind of there might have been a bit of anxiety as a little kid. I just always felt I had to do something, or that there was something more to do. I've just always kind of been hyper conscious about that we don't have a long time here. And I didn't really want to have an average life. Not that anything's wrong with that, but I just always had a mind for adventure and wanted to go do and learn and see. And I think that was just heightened when I had almost lost my life. And when I'd gotten out of the hospital, I knew that my biggest goal was to teach other people to be able to see what they're truly capable of. And not just from a training standpoint, training's just a tool to do that, but just in any standpoint. And so I've always had this sense of urgency to want to pass that along, because everybody's got different things that they go through, and some may not have had that wake up call yet. Mm-hmm. And you just don't want anybody, including yourself, of course, to waste their potential or feel like you're not helping them get there in some degree or shape or form. So yeah, I've always had that kind of energy about me. That would be fair to say.
So did you like always know that you wanted to get into coaching, like in high school and stuff like that? Were you in that mindset, like, yeah, I want to coach, great athletes, or help those athletes become great?
I think, I went through the phases that most people go through when you're a little kid. You had all kinds of weird things that you wanted to do. I think the first thing I always wanted to do is, and I don't know why, you probably judge me from this, but first thing I was like, when I was in first or second grade, I was reading something and I told my teacher, apparently I wanted to be an assassin. So that was pretty interesting. And then that turned into me wanting to be a professional baseball player when I was younger and what have you. And then, you hold on to that when you're in middle school and high school. But then in high school, I started taking a different interest. I just was always naturally very interested in the body. I thought it was fascinating how it adapted to everything. Mm-hmm. I'd seen my first Rocky movie when I was younger, and I started doing push-ups and sit-ups, and it was crazy seeing how your body adjusted and fell in love with training. So I knew I always wanted to do something that encompassed athleticism or development or physiology. I don't know if the roots of strength and conditioning actually took until I was about 16 or 17 when I read my first book in that regard. But one of my first books that I had ever read, just from leisure, and my parents still kind of joke about this, at 14, apparently I bought Ian King's Book of Muscle.
Perfect.
And I just always thought that stuff was very interesting. So it really took root as I became more aware of just the performance side of it. Growing up in Nebraska, that was always in your ear with the Husker Power program and Boyd Epley. But I never really knew how to get into that. I didn't have any friends or mentors or anything like that that was in strength and conditioning. And so when I had gone to college, I knew I wanted to do exercise science, but my advisor at the time, you know, I don't think he was aware of this world as well. So he was just, you know, why don't you open up a gym? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? So it wasn't really until, you know, probably my junior or senior year in college that somebody more formally told me about the space as it existed and had mentioned Athletes Performance and the Olympic Training Institutes, you know, at Lake Placid and Colorado Springs and all that, where I started to really see a segue of, oh, okay, I can actually go work at these places. And, and that just continued to build from there. So the desire was always there. I just didn't know the route until a little bit later.
That's so funny that you bring up Ian King's book, because the very first book that I found was because of a segment on SportsCenter when Nomar was training. And of course it was Mark Verstegen's book, Core Performance. Sure. That was the very first, and I was like 16 years old, and like going through that whole program of like prehab stuff, like doing all that like activation work way back then. I feel like I was way ahead of the game thanks to that book.
Right.
And like that is then what got me to Mike Boyle, and then, you know, to Eric Cresty, and to everyone out there. So it's just funny how those books can, that we just stumble upon, can lead us to where we end up getting.
For sure. And it's interesting. I don't know if you experienced the same thing, but you know, I remember coming up and growing up, you know, we all do the same kind of thing where we're very much into bodybuilding and going to the gym for hours and in. And then I remember when I read Mark's book, and I don't know if, like I said, you felt the same way, but hearing that you could rest and recover and do these things and still get better was so foreign to me at a time when I was still doing body part type training and my leg day was finishing with 60 reps of squat or leg press. And it was just more. And you just thought you were growing. And then I was, you know, I was really, athletes can take time off and get better. And I tried it for the first time and my body started opening up, but it was just such a foreign thing at first. So you can definitely appreciate how athletes go through that transformation when they come and they have this tremendous sense of urgency where they go to train with you or myself or anybody listening. And then you try to teach them about recovery. I didn't want to hear it at one point in my life either, you know, and then you kind of trust and take a leap of faith. And I'm sure you can agree, we're both glad we did.
Yeah, I went from that kid that always was like rolling ankles and getting hurt in games. And like, I swear, like the next year in basketball, I didn't miss a single game or practice. And I really attribute it to not only lifting, but, you know, literally just learning how to do activation work and properly warm up and things like
that. That's awesome.
Instead of, you know, doing, all right, right over left, and then stretch for 10 seconds, all right, left over right, and like all the, you know, the football calisthenic stuff that we did growing up. So you went to college, and what was your path to get to AP? As you mentioned before, like you knew of Athletes Performance. Was that kind of the goal for you to see, like, oh, let's see if I can get like a job there?
Yeah, no, I think at the time I was just trying to learn everything I could. It wasn't, I didn't have a particular bias any one way. And so when I'd gotten to college and, you know, I'd done well and kinesiology and loved their program and everything, but knew I wanted to go the performance route. I had originally applied to the Olympic Training Center in Lake Placid. Wow. And one of my biomechanics teachers, you know, he had made me aware of it. And then I had worked with an exercise physiology teacher who had an in with the U.S. Olympic Institute and had worked with Paula Radcliffe in the past and a number of other international runners and marathoners and things like that. And he had written me a really nice letter of recommendation, something that, you know, I had sent him a box of Omaha steaks for later in my career when I'd finally gotten a job. But, you know, I had thought I was going to be a shoe-in there. And little did I know, and this was just me being naive at the time, of course I wasn't going to get that internship. I had no weight room experience other than my own training at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when I sent them my resume, they basically saw a kid that, you know, had good grades and seemed to have a glaring recommendation, but I didn't end up getting that. And at the time I was, you know, I was done with school and I was like, wow, I don't really know where to go next. And then like somebody mentioned AP, I had reached out to them and they had said, I'm sorry, you know, you're not a student anymore. You need student status. It can't happen. And I accepted that answer for a moment. And then I remember I called back and I was like, you know what? I'd just like to come tour the place. And I felt like if I could get my foot in the door, I could talk my way into it. And they said, well, sorry, you know, we're pretty busy. All you could do is come in on the weekend, and I'm not sure anybody's here on the weekend. And it was just, it wasn't working out. So I talked to my dad, and my dad was like, you know, nonsense. I got to visit a client in Arizona anyway, so you're coming with me. So I had gone with him, and basically I just walked in the door on a Saturday. They were doing regen. I think literally the only two people that I knew were there was somebody from HR at the time, and then you know, a coach running the guys through regen. And so the HR woman was like, wow, like, really? Okay, fine, I'll give you the tour. And so she gave me the tour, and she had asked me, you know, why I was so interested in it, what I wanted to do. And I must have said something right, because she goes, well, I'm gonna have you meet with Jeff. And at the time I'm thinking, I have no idea. All right, cool, bring Jeff out here. That sounds good. Well, Jeff is the president, and he happened to be there on the Saturday just through the grace of God. And he sat me down and just kind of got to get to know me. And you know, I tried to really instill and transmit the sense of urgency that I had. And he goes, I'll tell you what, this is a really uncommon thing, but if you can get student status through signing up through a local university, you know, for a course or what have you, and you can get down to Pensacola in 1 week, you can have it. And he says, we've had people call, we've had people send resumes. I don't think I've ever really had anybody fly down here and walk in the door. And so I was like, absolutely. I went back home, talked to my parents. At the time, they didn't really get what I was doing. You know, I think my older brother, he used to give me a hard time and say, what are you going to, you're going to move to Florida to be a glorified gym teacher. And, but I went and took a leap and went down there, and actually had driven down during Hurricane Gustav. So really the whole trip was very interesting, having to fly down here, go down there during a hurricane. It was riddled with a lot of very interesting adventures that could have easily been a sequel to Vegas Vacation. And it never stopped. And so anyways, went down there, really enjoyed it, but knew I wanted to get into the team setting as well, just to get a balanced perspective. I knew Nebraska was really, you know, the bedrock and where this whole thing started in many regards. And so I went up to them and faced the same problem. Sorry, you're not a student. We try to do it to in-state students. You know, you give them the spiel about how you'll sweep the weight room floor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, halfway through my internship in AP, they called and said, all right, the minute you get home, you'll start. And went up there, and from there, that led to my graduate assistantship and so on and so forth. So I don't think it was ever really an end goal of saying, I have to work at this place, I have to work at that place. I just really wanted a balanced perspective, and I wanted to learn from what I believed were some of the best places to learn. And in my opinion, that was AP at the time, now Exos, and then University of Nebraska. And then I was fortunate to learn at Southern Illinois University with Jared Nesland. And it was just, I had to take a lot of shots, because I didn't really have a mentor guiding me of where to go. No, don't go here, go here. And you know what? I really wouldn't have done it any other way if I could go back. You always end up where you're supposed to. So that's a Reader's Digest version, as hard as that is to believe, of my path there.
That's pretty incredible. So I guess my next question would be, is what did you envision doing? Was it just like you going in and like, I really just want to help share what I've learned in terms of the best ways to improve human performance with people that want to get better? Was that kind of like your personal, not like your goal, but that's
no,
what interested you?
Yeah, Kevin, spot on. You know, I just really wanted to help people. I think long-term my vision was and still is, I really wanted to make a difference in this industry. I looked at it as attaining this knowledge saved my life. It helped me rebuild my body back up from, I think I was about 95 pounds when I was hospitalized, and it helped me build my body back up and literally save my life. And so I wanted to be the guy that when you went to NSCA clinics or, you know, any of the other clinics around, that people just felt, you know what, when I'm up there speaking or presenting or even just talking to people, they felt, here's a good guy that knows his stuff, that genuinely wants to be in this profession to help move it forward, and isn't here to sell a bunch of BS, isn't here to do a bunch of flash and dance programming, just is somebody that the world of strength and conditioning thought was around to improve it and better it for other coaches and athletes and as an industry. And that's still my goal. And so it wasn't really, I had childhood dreams of, you know, training guys like Colin Kaepernick, you know, or anything like that. Although the irony is he came and trained with us this whole offseason, you know, great guy. Mm-hmm. Coach Uyama has done a good job, a fantastic job out the 49ers getting him, you know, really educated and training. But I didn't have really these pipe dreams of I have to work with the highest level guys or I have to do this. I felt like I just kind of wanted to help.
Right.
And that was shown in my path. I've worked with everybody from kids to amputees to now I head up the NFL program to Major League Baseball to, you know, housewives when our coach is out, Joel Sanders, who runs our general population courses, you know, I'll train his, you know, woman's noon group that he calls it the ladies power hour or what have you. At Exos, you have to coach everybody. And I just wanted to really kind of remove the fluff from the profession and help as much as I could.
You mentioned the desire to help others. And I think for those of us in the industry, whether it be personal trainers, strength coaches, what have you, that's the answer that a lot of people give, is like they thrive on helping others. So my question for you is, how are we as fitness professionals, say, how are we letting people down, do you think, in terms of helping others? Do you see any like common things in the industry where we're just like kind of like letting down the population that we're trying to help?
Yeah, I do. That's a really good question. The things I see are the same things that Robert Greene, one of my favorite authors, always said he saw when he was looking at the self-help book industry. You know, he had gone through some tough times in his career, and he had said whenever he turned to literature for help, it was always kind of rosy, you know, rose-colored lenses and, you know, create powerful habits and always be positive. And he said, you know, none of these books really help people see the world as it truly is. Mm-hmm. I think we are letting people down if we, you know, kind of just coddle them and cater to them. And we continue to facilitate this culture that you've seen over the past few years with our youth, just in general, where, you know, oh, you can do it, it's always positive. That's one thing to definitely help people along their path and guide them and enhance their power of self-belief. But really, where people's self-efficacy comes from is them going through some hardship and hard times. We're not trying to bring people into our training facilities and have them experience this luxurious resort and where we do everything for them. And all the exercises are very cute and nuanced and filled with variety. These people need to understand the path to their life change is going to be difficult, and they need to be given the tools to handle that. And so I think getting people out of their comfort zone, again, all in an ethical manner. I understand some of the listeners may train 65-year-olds, 70-year-olds, things like that. But again, you can still get them out of their comfort zone. You're not doing them any favors by coddling them. And that's not always through training. You can get them out of their comfort zone, you know, just through the conversations that you have and asking what they're doing in terms of their daily routine and are they stretching their boundaries and their limits. We all have to facilitate that psychological growth just as much as we do physical. So I just don't want to see the industry turn from something where we're all teachers and then we all turn into waiters or waitresses where it's, right, you know, these people just come and we take care of everything for it. That doesn't help people. Nobody grows from that. Nobody gets a calloused kind of psyche from that. And that's what they need to really be able to take these things and adapt them long-term into their life.
You mentioned kind of like adapting to hardship and stuff like that is, you know, pretend like I'm someone that's just listening who I go to the gym 3 days a week. I don't have a trainer or anything like that. I just like to go in, you know, get in a good training session and get out. Is there any way you can put into words how like one would program something like that?
Sure. Yeah. I think the first thing is how you would communicate it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll talk about the programming piece. How you communicate it is, you know, part of that first introduction. You know, obviously we're really happy to have you here. You know, congratulations on taking this next step into, you know, achieving your, whether it's life goals or sport goals or performance goals or what have you, but just understand that a lot of this work here is going to come from you. I'm here to guide you. I certainly want to teach you and I want to educate you, but there's going to be days where you don't feel like coming. There's going to be days where you're very sore. There's going to be other days where you're going to have a tremendous high and you're going to love it. And the main thing is that you need to understand that in life in general, you're not always going to be riding the wave. Sometimes you're going to have to pick yourself up, and consistency is the number one thing we need from you here. And they've got to have that same kind of understanding. And if they don't, you know, you're dealing with a client that's probably going to give you some problems down the road. And if they don't know what that means, well, that's your job to show them and foster that relationship. When you program, I think there's a lot of interesting ways that you can program to kind of build that, you know, and that can come from anything, just basic iso holds, you know, in split squat positions or, you know, push-up positions, things that, again, in an ethical way, teach people that they've got to kind of be inside their head for a moment or two when they're holding those positions and deal with some relative discomfort. If you have an avid cyclist that comes in, it's getting him on the VersaClimber or ropes, or getting him learning different kettlebell conditioning modalities, what have you. Your creativity can guide you, but it's teaching people that I definitely want to help you improve in the areas you want, but that involves you getting out of your comfort zone. And I think that just you have to give them levels of discomfort, again, ethically, through different things like that. With my athletes, it's always competitions. Mm-hmm. It's helping them understand that people are driven by one of four primary things. They're driven by, the want or need to acquire, to bond, to defend, or to learn. Everybody's got some kind of innate natural drive that really spurns their action and higher level behavior. And you've got to find what that is in that person and kind of get them past that threshold. So that's some of the ways I do it. I just try to find a lot of things that don't necessarily feed their ego. It's definitely almost like a sandwich technique with a compliment. You may get to do a few things that you really enjoy and you love. There's going to be some other things that aren't going to be so fun, but I'm going to tell you why you need them. And hopefully we can continue to cultivate that kind of mindset and ultimately make it a strength and make you more well-rounded. Does that answer your question?
No, totally. And it's really fascinating, just because I guess the best way I could put this is that, if you have parents that are sending their kids to go get trained at your facility, they usually are somewhat well off. They have the extra money to have their kids get some extra strength and conditioning work in. And usually those are the kids that it's sometimes hard to build up. So I guess any suggestions for us coaches out there that are working with younger athletes? Like, I'm dealing with middle school kids who are like, half of them, they come in and it's the last place that they want to be. But, I do my best to make sure it's fun, it's a good time. But at the same time, we're getting in, some really good, effective training. So just curious, any suggestions for that younger population too?
Yeah. And I think this is something that you'll definitely be able to relate to, working with kids. And, I coach middle school and high school baseball group twice mm-hmm. a week as well. Like you said, a lot of it starts with engagement. These little guys have no idea of the risk, the reward. They're only here a few times a week. And how long do you train them for, Kevin? A half hour or an hour?
An hour and a half.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. An hour and a half, but still over the spectrum of everything else they got going on in their life, that's not a long time.
Right.
And so one of the ways that I try to engage them is, I ask them a lot of questions when I'm teaching. So I'll say, hey guys, when we're getting ready to steal and head to second base, what foot do you think you want to load? And, I'll listen to their answers and then I'll have them walk through it. And then, I'll teach them the drill and teach them why, and having them do it right, having them do it wrong, making sure they're an active participant in that interaction. Cause otherwise we just get up, and I'm sure you've been through it, we start talking and delivering information. And athletes are clever. They'll look at you. They'll nod their head. They'll be like, oh yeah, yeah, totally with you. And then you'll ask them to do it. And all of a sudden it's like, hey coach, how many reps, or what leg are we starting on, or this and that. So I think questions, the power of questions when you coach, is phenomenal, because it makes them, they have to have at least a modicum of effort, mm-hmm. As opposed to just passively receiving that information. And so, the other day we were doing a RDL and I was just teaching them how to hinge. And I was like, guys, where do you feel this? I don't know, back by my butt, my hamstrings, awesome. Now, we talked earlier, that's where a lot of your speed comes from, right? So what do you think this helps you with? And they'll be like, oh, base running, this and that, and then all of a sudden it starts going. And of course you're always gonna have, I don't know if you have this, we have a kid named Cruz, he's always the smart aleck kid. And he'll just sit there and he'll shout out whatever answer. Why do we do this? He'll be like, explosiveness, and it helps you in sports. And I look at him and I go, Cruz, awesome answer, and I know you're a little schmoozer, so tell me how it does that. And again, I'm not suggesting you slow down the session and we turn it into an old school game show of 21, mm-hmm. but just picking certain key components out, just like people pick out key lifts that they're going to do throughout the day, or key plyometric drills or speed drills or what have you. Pick out key questions that you think can engage them and actually kind of rein them back in and bring them back to the session. It's funny, we got a new puppy, and the dog trainer says, hey, when you take it for a walk, you have to stop periodically. Before you cross the street, tell it to sit, or sometimes reverse direction, because otherwise you'll think the dog's well-behaved, when in reality it's just going in autopilot and it's not really engaged or learning. And I'm not trying to compare people's kids to dogs, but it's all behavior and it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Great coaching starts with engagement, And that will make your life a lot easier, because it's certainly not, you know, the missing link isn't in your programming with youth. They just need basic foundational technique and motor skills and things like that.
Exactly. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is, again, what's the best way to put this? So not everyone out there is as, I guess, again, motivational or upbeat as you might be. Like even like times, like we all have those days where we kind of walk into the gym and we do our best to flip that switch to make sure that we are doing a great job coaching. We're fired up. We're really positive. I always kind of like ask people, like, are there any, like, not motivational books, but anything in terms of like mindset that you direct people towards when they ask you, like, Brett, how are you just so fired up all the time? How do I get like that?
Yeah. In terms of books, I think, you know, you got to be careful with what you read, because so many books will kind of get you fired up when you watch it, and they'll preach again, you know, positivity and all these things, but they don't really help you understand why you feel that way.
Right.
You know, some people just think, oh, like, I'm tired, you know? Yeah. No, it's not really, it's more than that. You all have internal programming. And so I'd say the best book I read lately on that was, it's called The Upside to Your Dark Side. And it's by, let me see here, I'll pull it up for you because I have my Kindle right here. The Upside to Your Dark Side, or maybe I'll do. I'm sorry, I can't pull that up right now. But The Upside to Your Dark Side is a really great book that talks about how much of a farce it is that we're always all just going to walk around positive. And mm-hmm. it talks about that's not wholeness. Right. You shouldn't worry about being a positive person. You should worry about being, you know, a whole person, and understanding that some days when you feel like that, you've got to kind of dig deep and understand why. And then you can also leverage that. If you're having a rough day a little bit, you know, try to channel it positively. But sometimes your athletes might need that saltiness that you have a little bit more of now. Mm-hmm. You know, so I go in and I told the guys the other day I was having a rough day. It's just been a long coaching stretch for me. And I was like, listen, I'm going to put a little salt in your life stew here. And they were like, what are you talking about? I go, there's going to be some days where you guys go through it and you're tired and you're not feeling good and this and that. And, you know, you need to understand why and you need to dig through it. So we're going to do a little harder session today. And I want you guys to kind of have those tools in the back of your head when you're working on that, or when you feel like that, and just preaching that to them, that it's okay to have those days. It's not okay to understand why you're not having those days.
Right.
And the book is really phenomenal from the standpoint that it says, you know, we're humans. We're going to be wired to feel aggression, sadness, emotions, you know, elation, all these things at time, and you can channel them creatively. And so if I'm having one of those days, you know, I'll find one of my athletes that I know needs to be pushed a little bit more, and I'll transmit a little bit of that salt to him, and I'll just be like, listen, man, you've got to push through this today. You've been getting through, you've kind of been going through the motions. Let's go. You know, I shouldn't need to motivate you, and you need to understand these things are going to happen, and you have two choices. You can either act like an adult and handle it and take advantage of the moment that you have, or, you know, you can just succumb to this, and guess what? You've wasted a day. So I'd really encourage people to read that. And it might surprise some people. Even in talks about, Kevin, tendencies such as, you know, people that have psychopathic tendencies, right? And so when you think about the word psychopath, everybody thinks of guys like Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, the dark part.
Very negative context to it.
Totally. Yeah. And but what this book says is really some of our most successful presidents, in particular, and leaders, guys like Teddy Roosevelt, and they call it the Teddy effect in the book, they scored the highest of any of the other leaders in psychopathic tendencies. And what they say is, you know, psychopaths typically have to have some form of really strong self-belief that they can do things that others can't, and they don't care about the consequences. And we can certainly understand the dark part of that is kind of scary. Mm-hmm. But then you also start to see the side of that is necessary in anybody really being able to take their ambition and do something useful with it. You can't have a lot of self-doubt or always worry about the what ifs or all. Sometimes you just got to roll. And so I think helping people, again, to bring that all back, motivation and inspiration are so temporary. It's much better to help them have understanding as to why they're having that and how they can even leverage that and how that's part of being a whole person. You know, don't sit there and go read a motivational quote or necessarily go up and watch a YouTube video and then all of a sudden you think life is going to be gloomy. That won't sustain you. That'll just sustain you for the moment. Does that make sense?
No, totally. And maybe I guess I thought about this more before talking, because this is super interesting to me now. So, okay, first off, the book's downloading via Audible to my phone right now.
Oh, you're going
to
love it.
I'm going to jump it to the front of the queue because it sounds super interesting. I mean, we both know a lot of people in the industry. We follow a lot of people like on Twitter, and now we're getting stuff through Instagram and Facebook, and there's lots of like great positivity, whether it be those quotes that will get you fired up, or, you know, maybe like we're just saying, like I posted a training video, like maybe that will get someone fired up. Are you kind of saying we need to be a little bit more real with our athletes and our clients? Like that's something that would help better the communication?
Absolutely. It's, you know, trying to just pepper yourself with, you know, false positivity in that is just kind of like, you know, what we do, what some people do when they have pain, right? Where they want to just take pills or inject rather than actually finding the source of the problem. It's taking that, and you've heard this analogy a lot, it's taking the battery out of the smoke detector rather than finding the fire. So in my opinion, and one thing that book says is when you avoid problems, that also means that you're avoiding finding solutions to those problems. And people that are whole, again, you shouldn't think of just positive people. You should try to be a whole person. Whole people have the ability to approach their goals flexibly by continuing to invest, you know, when progress occurs at a pace that they want, but also swapping out old goals for new ones when, you know, failure is certain or they have a situation that they can't maybe overcome in the moment. And so you've got to be able to shift the upside or the downside to get the best possible outcomes in any given situation. And I think those people are the most successful. They're the best learners. They enjoy the deepest, at the end of the day, well-being, because they don't try to mask it and they don't try to shield their feelings. And it's just going to manifest in another area of their life. So you've got to have this kind of emotional time travel that you sit there and say, okay, what is what I'm doing right now, and trying to look at it in probably an inauthentic way or a way that doesn't really deal with the issue, going to do for me over the long term? Because every decision is based off of an assumption of how you expect to feel in the future then. And we don't know how we're going to feel in the future. Just like despite all the monitoring techniques people are using right now, that helps us all manage the stress, within our training environment, helps us understand how they deal with stress outside of it. But it's still not a foolproof method of really making sure we're doing the best training, because we still have to deal with how they react in the moment to different stressors.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. What are you guys using these days in terms of monitoring people's training sessions and making sure that, you know, they're working as hard as they should be, or, you know, after the fact recovering where they should be?
Yeah, so this might not impress the big time nerds in the crowd, but, you know, we don't have an Omega Wave here. We don't have a lot of the tools and toys that people have. It's, you know, Exos is a business, and the reality is all those things kind of go against the bottom line of keeping the doors open as well.
Totally.
And again, but you can't let that sacrifice the ultimate bottom line of getting your athletes right and make sure you're doing that ethically. So the reality is we have athletes, and it depends on the guys that come through the door. You can have folks for a week, you can have a folk 2 weeks, but the most common is somebody from about three to 12 weeks, depending on the group that they're in. If it's just an individual or a group of individuals trying to get better and they're out here staying, it's usually 3 weeks. If it's my NFL guys, I can have them here from January all the way through March or the whole month of July or what have you. So this is definitely going to depend on the coach. What I use is, of course, just baseline, you know, questionnaire, you know, talking to them like, how are you feeling today? Where would you rate this 1 to 5? I know it's subjective, you know, pardon my language, tough shit, life subjective. At least we're doing something and talking to them. I'll use the Kaiser units. We don't have Tendos here, so I got to do the best I can. And I'll use the Kaiser units of not only looking at total power output, but can they keep the prescribed reps above 90% of their best effort? I know that doesn't show me velocity in terms of meters per second, but I know if they get a great power output and they keep that at each rep at 90% of their best effort or above, that should be around that realm that's fast enough for it to transfer to sport, especially if I load them correctly in terms of using the right percentages of their relative, you know, their 1RM. You know, we can use jump mats, but there's so much, you know, in terms of, you know, we get weekly updates in terms of their body comp, hydration. So we do get a big picture. We just don't get to use the BioForce or the Omega, you know, Wave and things like that. But, and listen, I think a lot of people discredit just being able to trust their coach's eye to a degree. Right. And again, I know that makes some people shriek, but listen, there were a lot of coaches way before us that did these things okay. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, judging by the record books, we've had some great performances in the past. And we talk about working within your limitations. Listen, I don't have a force platform here. We don't have a force platform that we can use. So when I'm having guys do depth jumps, as Jim Radcliffe says, I have to see, do they look more like a bouncy ball or a tomato?
Right.
Do they look like a well-inflated basketball going down the court, or do they look like they're jumping in wet cement? Some of that, Kevin, I have to rely upon. So my dad's a stockbroker, and he taught us to always look at trends and not occurrences. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is, through the questionnaire, my interaction, seeing how their weights or power outputs progress, the percentages of those power outputs in terms of, are they keeping it above 90%, their reactivity on the ground, I try to put together a Bob Ross type composite, illustration of, do I think that athlete's where they need to be? And athletes are smart, they'll know, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit like this, but I know I can push one more week. And sometimes that's what we got to rely on, is as much as everybody talks about the Exos budget, we have to be really fiscally responsible to keep our doors open. And so that means coaches like myself and others have to rely on a mix between, yeah, we have some objective measures, but we also have to be subjective as well. And I know that's not ideal. And if I had all the tools, I'd use a lot of them. But the reality is, not all of us do, and you got to do the best you can.
All right. And really, like, how long does it take to ask those questions, and how much you get so much quality feedback from that in just like a minute?
Right. And somebody said, you know how the world of Twitter is. And so somebody had reached out one time on Twitter, and they said, well, what are you guys even doing to track results? I think they had responded to a post where we had talked about guys getting great results in the football program. And they go, oh, yeah, what results are you getting? How do you know if you're not tracking it? It's pretty clear, buddy. We get body comp follow-ups on them. We see their progression of the load or power output over time. They do stick to 2 to 6 week programs out here. We ask the athlete, and as Joe Ken says, one of the most transferable qualities that we have in this field is confidence. Mm-hmm. So if the athlete's loads are increasing, their power output's increasing with the measures that we use, their body composition is improving, their hydration status is good, and better yet, they feel great, I'd say that's pretty clear-cut results. I can't do a regression analysis on that, but I'm not quite sure I have to if the athlete, all those things paint a pretty clear picture, and the guy looks like he's about to run through a brick wall. We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's the internet is a whole different discussion that we probably don't need to waste our time on today. But
right.
So and the other thing that I want to bring up is, like you mentioned, like needing to stay within the budget at Exos, and you guys get a lot of press for the NFL Combine stuff, all the the pros that you have in the off season, but you guys are taking in a lot of people that are just, you're what you want to call them, like regular athletes, people that are just trying to get better. Like you mentioned, just general population that are looking to, like, in their minds, get in shape.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's, this isn't some kind of Illuminati-based culture where only the highest level guys come in. If you were to walk in here at 6 or 7 in the morning, you're going to see our morning groups, with just average Joes and Janes. At noon, they have the ladies' power hour, and then in the evening, they have a 6 o'clock class. So we have dedicated coaches to all their, just like I handle NFL and baseball and UFC and military, and I'll do some high school and stuff here and there too. We have coaches that handle Gen Pop and all that. And so we definitely just have average Joes and Janes and the long shot kid that, we had one kid that lived in a small town of 500 in Missouri that literally sold 3 of his prize-winning steer to come out here and train for a little bit. And we have this guy asked me if eating a box of Fruit Loops would allow him to still get a six-pack. So you get all kinds of people that come through the door. And that's why you have to love people in this profession. You can't just love training, because you can know every single bit of Russian text or, just anything regarding physiology. But if you can't connect with people and all their variations and oddities and proclivities that they have, you're going to be out the door pretty quick.
Well, and that's a great thing to bring up. Like, I'm 29, so I haven't been doing this like forever, but the best trend that I could say, like the trend that I could say is proven the most throughout this industry, is that the people that have the most clients or attract the most athletes, they're not the ones that are always getting the best results. It's not the people with the best program. It's the people that connect with the people that they're training the best. They have a great personality. They're nice. They are, considerate, and they actually care about what they're doing. And they're not just like, yeah, like you said, like I spent 6 hours last night going through some like Russian text from 1976, and now we're going to do this whole different volume training this week. That's the trend that I see the most.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there's a time for that in your career too. You know, I mean, everybody, a lot of us have spent that time in, you know, our little tiny offices, if you want to call it that, or our bedroom or our couch or in the gym, you know, reading these things and taking notes and watching seminars and all this and studying everything from, you know, like I love Jim Wendler, Dave Tate. I love Zatsiworski. I love, you know, super training. We all love that stuff. But, you know, sometimes when I hear people get up and they start talking about that ad nauseum, I can't help but think, okay, who do you train?
Right.
Who do you train that is requiring you to use supra-maximal eccentrics? You know, like I've trained NFL players now for 4.5 years. I have never had one guy where I felt like the one thing he was missing in his training was super maximal eccentric training. I just haven't seen it yet, you know? And so many of these people just need basic stuff, and we'll use bands and chains and we'll use Olympic lifts and we'll use jumps and throws and we'll use everything. But some of this stuff, it's like, guys, you've got to branch out. You've got to be as, Ron McKeever, he says, you got to be the CEO strength coach. You've got to get beyond that myopic view and think about how can you make all this stuff meaningful to this person's world. Mm-hmm. But you said it, Kevin, you know, trust is the macronutrient that best feeds the coach and athlete or client relationship. Trust is. And if you don't have that through a combination of rapport and getting them results, then, you know, I don't know what to do with that. So that's a big key for anybody that is in this field or in, you know, looking to get into it. And it's a thing that I have to remind myself of too, is we can't be on way too far on any end of the spectrum. Otherwise you just end up in la la land.
I was able to talk with Mark a little bit when we were out in Chicago for the Perform Better Summit. And he was talking a little bit about just all the amazing stuff that you guys are doing with the active and now, you know, retired or the veteran military. I was wondering if you could discuss a little bit about what you do with them and kind of how you go about, like, how do you attack what they require in terms of training?
Yeah, that's powerful. And Mark's 100% correct. I think one of, you know, if I were to die today, one of the biggest things that I had achieved in my life was just being able to help anybody that served overseas, you know, whether it's veteran or active duty. Absolutely. That was one of the biggest honors and continues to be that I'll ever. And I have, I'm really blessed to make some good friendships there where someday when I don't have a kid now, but when I do, you know, one of my former relationships in that regard had sent me a framed American flag that was overseas with him. And, you know, they bless you by giving you some of these coins and just things to show their gratitude and thanks. And these are powerful things that I'm going to tell my kids the rest of my life and help them understand the value of. To talk about, to touch on what Mark was saying, you know, we have everything from helping wounded warriors, which I just got done coaching along with some of our other staff. There's a group of 24 wounded warriors that came out, and a lot of these folks just ranging from psychological to physical issues. And, you know, they're not going back overseas. They're greatly debilitated or disabled, or some of them more psychologically so than other. And you're trying to help them find an identity through movement, whatever that means to them, even if that's just foam rolling and going through movement prep, or for some of them, if they're able-bodied and can really start strength training again. And we try to teach them, like, yes, you can still do some stuff. Oh, both of your shoulders are blown up. You can't do this. You had a reconstruction. I know you can't do a bench press or a push-up or an overhead press, but we can still get you doing armbar progressions to work the stabilizers in your body. Mm-hmm. And for them, it's not about the exercise. It's about the mentality of, wow, I do have some control over what's going on in my body still. I'm not lost. I'm not somebody who was once, you know, a proud member of the tactical community, and now I'm just some broken, helpless person. None of them are. And to be able to give that to them is tremendous. And then the folks that we still help try to return back to active duty, it's the same way. I used to travel to military bases and we do these 2-week courses there, and we try to teach them kind of how to train. And it always started off the same way. For the first week, they didn't want to hear anything about recovery. They didn't want to hear about anything other than even just CrossFit or extreme training methods, you know, that live in other realms. They were like, our job's random and chaotic, so does our training, and that needs to be. And we understood those things, and we went in with great humility, but we also taught them, yeah, but there are some things that you can control, so that if you guys are injured or you guys are banged up, you still need to serve. When you're overseas on tour, you need to be ready to go. Mm-hmm. And if your training's too chaotic and too unpredictable, how are you going to predict how you feel over there when your life's on the line? And And those are extreme examples, but in reality, a lot of them came around to that and they understood that. So we just tried to say, listen, we appreciate what you do. We want to help you get there. All we're trying to do is increase your operational age, how long you can be in the soft community, along with your tactical knowledge. We want to expand your career and help you get back there. And so really awesome to be able to work with these folks and get them back overseas on tour or help them get some facet of their life back. And again, I just think that's what's funny. If somebody came in and visited Exos, you're not just coming in and seeing, you know, all these athletes. You're seeing people that are athletes in the truest sense mm-hmm. and trying to work out how they can still make their body move and learn and really empower themselves through finding a few solutions.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's most impressive to me about what you guys have put together at Exos is just not how you've just branched out in terms of your facility in Arizona, but now it's on a global scale where like even like there's you guys are in Okinawa, like working on military bases out there and making sure that people are, you know, our soldiers are given, you know, the proper training physically to make sure that they can perform and that they can do what they need to do on the field, which is just incredibly impressive and just very cool stuff that you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
So, you know what? I think this is what I'm going to do. I think that's a really good place to wrap up because I think we covered a ton of stuff today. And for, like, we were talking a little bit off air, it's always great for, like, that first episode to kind of just kind of go all over the place.
And, for sure.
And let the audience really get to know you if they haven't checked out your stuff. And then hopefully, I mean, if you're cool, I'd love to get you back on soon and maybe do a follow-up and get some stuff from the audience to bounce off you too.
Absolutely. Anytime. Anytime.
So where can people check your stuff out if they want to see what you're up to? And of course, you're on Twitter and on Instagram and all that stuff. Where can people check your stuff out?
Yeah, as Kevin mentioned, you know, on Twitter or Instagram, it's @coach_Brett with 2 T's, B as in boy. So @coachBrettB. I'm more active on that than I am Facebook. So if I haven't gotten back to you on Facebook, I'm sorry. I don't check my messages that often. You can always call. Email is great. That's just bbartholomew@teamexos.com. So that's the best way to kind of stay engaged in terms of what I'm doing. And you're always welcome to come by. I love it when people call up and say, hey, I'm in Phoenix. You care if I come watch a session? No, none of us care. So come in, watch a session. Well, you know, we'll go to lunch, talk shop, what have you, if we have the time and availability to do so. But it's open to our policy. So, and that extends obviously to you too, Kevin. You know, the more people that we can continue to connect with in this industry, the better it makes us all because we've got to team up on that forefront together and continue to hopefully push out those that maybe aren't in it for the right reasons. I mean, they'll do that themselves, but the more of a common culture we can build and common ground, the best. So come by anytime or reach out to me on social media.
Well, this works out because, you know, not only is if you guys are out there and you're ever going to be going to Arizona, take Brett up on that offer just because it is just an unbelievable experience to go through their facility and see how they do things. And like, I literally went back to MVSC with like 2 pages of notes. Oh yeah, maybe we should tweak this. Maybe we should be doing this. Like maybe we should talk about doing this with our athletes and stuff like that. Just because you guys are always you know, at the front of the game and stuff like that. And now I have a new book to read, which I'm like super pumped to check it out. And I'm anti hardcover book now, so I'm all about the paperback books. They're just easier to throw in my bag when I go on trips and stuff. And the paperback isn't coming out until September 1st for the upside to your downside. But I got the audiobook. I'm going to start there, and hopefully I'll be able to pick up that paperback when it comes out too.
For sure. Yeah. Let me know how you like it. It's an awesome book, awesome resource. And I'll look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. And for everyone else out there, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for everyone out there that is supporting the show through things like patreon.com/thefitcast or through PayPal. And if you do subscribe to the show through iTunes, it means a lot if you go on there and submit a review. It helps shoot the show up in the rankings with that crazy iTunes algorithm. And hopefully the show stays above some of the you know, maybe less helpful shows out there. And of course, the fitcast.com, and you can find all my Twitter stuff on there as well. So Brett, yeah, really a huge pleasure to finally get you on the show, and I know we're going to be talking very soon.
Thanks, Kevin.